So today we're reading from Canto 3, Chapter 2, Remembrance of Lord Krishna, text number 18. Uva mushyangri sarojarenum Vismatam ishita puman vijigran Yo vispuradhu vitapena bhume Param kutantena tirashchakara Ka. Who else? Ba. Either. Amusha. The Lord's. Angri. Feet. Sarojarenum. Dust of the lotus. Vismatum. To forget. Ishita. May be able. Puman. Person. Vijigran. Smelling. Yaha. One who. Vispurat. Expanding. Hu vitapena. By the leaves of the eyebrows. Hume. Of the earth. Aharam. Burden. Krita antena. By death blows. Tirashchakara. Executed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Who, after smelling the dust of his lotus feet even once, could ever forget it? Simply by expanding the leaves of his eyebrows, Krishna has given the death blow to those who are burdening the earth. Purport. Translation responsively. Who, after smelling the dust of his lotus feet, even once, could ever forget it? Simply by expanding the leaves of his eyebrows, Krishna has given the death blow to those who are burdening the earth. Purport. Lord Krishna cannot be accepted as one of the human beings, even though he played the role of an obedient son. His actions were so extraordinary that by the simple raising of his eyebrows, he could deliver death blows to those who were burdening the earth. Om Gyanatim Yandasya Janjana Shalakya Chakshulamitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Shri Chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale Swayam rupa kadamayam tadati svaparantikam Vandeham shri guru shri tvaparakamalam Shri gurun vaishnavamscha Shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunatam vitam tam sajivam Sadvaitam savadupam prajna saitam krishna chaitanya devam Shri Radha Krishna Pranam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamstha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosute Tapta Kanchana Gauranki Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishvanu Sutta Devi Prananami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanam Pavnevyo Vaishnavyevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So just a short purport today. Well, we're hearing Uddhava continue his description and remembrance of Lord Krishna in his meeting with Vidura. Yesterday we were hearing that Uddhava, He says, all this behavior of the Lord gives me pain at heart. So he was remembering some of the different pastimes of Krishna, such as his exchange of love with his parents, Yashodamai and Nandamaraj. He knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but still this kind of behaviour of Krishna's with his devotees bewilders him. Prabhupada said in that purport, basically that Krishna's pastimes a couple of days ago Prabhupada says that the pastimes that Krishna plays, he plays the part of a son or a lover so perfectly that even pure devotees like Uddhava are bewildered. So he knows that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, but still all these pastimes are bewildering to Uddhava. So he's in this state of kind of bewilderment, and he's thinking about Krishna's pastimes and just kind of really in wonder and trying to comprehend these amazing pastimes of Krishna. And so we see there's, in today's verse, there's kind of two things. There's the opulence or the Aishvarya of Krishna, and there's the Madhurya or the sweetness of Krishna. So Uddhava first says that after smelling the dust of his lotus feet even once, who could ever forget that? So he's kind of pointing our attention to the sweetness of Krishna's lotus feet and how intoxicating that is for his pure devotees. But then he's saying, there's the other side of Krishna, that simply by expanding the leaves of his eyebrows, Krishna has given the death blow to those who are burdening the earth. So there's these two aspects of Krishna's person, that his Aishvarya and his Madhurya. And generally, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna finally recommends that we surrender to him. And we've spent so long not surrendering to Krishna and turning our back to Krishna in a very determined way, trying to get as far away from Krishna as we can. So therefore we need, if we're fortunate to meet devotees and come to Krishna consciousness, then we need some good reasons why we should surrender to Krishna. Where, of course, Krishna being the Supreme Lord, that's, for the devotees, that's enough to... they're intelligent enough to understand that, yes, Krishna is Supreme Lord, I will surrender to him, surrender my life to him. But when we're very materially conditioned, and we're very, we think ourselves as the centre of the universe, so we're reluctant, we're resisting Krishna's instruction to surrender. So therefore, we have so many scriptures to convince us why we should surrender to Krishna. So, and this is generally what we try to explain to people about Krishna, is his Aishvarya aspects, his different opulences. Krishna himself, of course, explains his position, his supreme position in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 9, he says that the whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. So, this understanding of God is there in most world religions, that except Buddhists who don't accept God. That God is the creator of the material universe. So, so we try to explain to people that the Lord is so great that He's created this whole material universe, but it's not like when we see something constructed in this in our little city or something. When we're driving around, there's always some construction going on, roadworks or new, especially apartment buildings. It's very, you know, intense way of exploiting the resources of nature is to pack everyone into a very small area like that. So there's apartment buildings going up, and over many months these building projects go on, and you have to raise so much money and hire so many contractors, builders, specialists, engineers, architects, the whole thing. But Krishna, His creation is just done by His will. He just says, yes, I'd like to have the material creation, and there it is, it's done. You know, in no time. So it's automatic. In that verse, there's the word automatically, it's manifested. So as well as just being put here by His will, then also by His will, it's maintained. And we see the seasons going on, and then at the end, by Krishna's will, it gets annihilated. So this is Krishna's position that we try to explain to people, His extraordinary opulence. And that's a, you know, it's like a beginning understanding. As I said, you know, Christians and Muslims also have this understanding that the Lord is the creator. Probably they don't know very much about annihilation and maintenance and so on. But anyway, and then Bhagavad Gita gives further details, even chapters 10 and 11 are practically, you know, dedicated to explaining how God is great. As Prabhupada explains, you know, most people understand if they're most theists, if they believers of believing the Lord, they understand that, yes, He is great. And, you know, we are small. Prabhupada said we have to know how God is great. So chapters 10, he's explaining his different... Krishna's explaining his different representations in the material world. He's of the mountains, he's the Himalayas, of non-moving mountains, I think. Meru Mountain can be moved, apparently. Of fishes, Krishna is the shark. So all the best things or the most powerful things in the material world are representing Krishna. And then chapter 11, there's Krishna's universal form, where all the soldiers are rushing to destruction in His mouths, and He has countless arms and faces and heads and arms and teeth. So this is another opulence of Krishna that He's presenting. And for the atheists who don't believe in God, as Prabhupada would often describe, Krishna says He is all-devouring death. So people go their whole life without God and, you know, ignoring Him or denying Him. Mostly just ignoring, you know, the sort of not, never think about there is a God or whenever. So for them, they're doing so many activities in their life and building careers and having families and acquiring possessions. And so they all think it's going great and, you know, endeavouring in so many ways. But then it just stops. It all just stops with death. And that's when they meet God. When it's all finished, then everything gets taken away. Whatever they accumulated, it's all taken away by Krishna in the shape of death. So that's how the atheists understand God. So we're also seeing Krishna also explains that another of his opulences, as the supreme controller, then everything's already done by him. So that's explained he explained to Arjuna that whole battlefield of Kurukshetra, in one sense, it wasn't necessary for all the kings and demons to be assembled. As we've often heard, that Krishna can just, Uddhava says today, just by raising his eyebrows, he could deliver death blows to those who are burdening the earth. So he didn't need to have a whole big war field and battle to annihilate all those miscreants. It was just to glorify the position of the Pandavas, to reciprocate with them be their friend, be their advisor, charioteer, and to glorify the Pandavas, their devotion, going through so many tribulations, but never giving up their dependence on Krishna. So he explains that Krishna says he didn't, everything's already done by him. He tells Arjuna to just fight and win glory. He says, conquer your enemies and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. All these soldiers are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savyasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. So the material conception of life makes us think that we're the doers by false ego, but actually everything's being done by nature, and nature itself is under the control of Krishna. I saw a news report the other day that they've already claimed that they went to the moon, but as Prabhupada said, that's not quite possible. If we understand the Vedic version, that's a heavenly planet, and you have to, just like a fish, you have to have a fish body to live in the water, you have to have the suitable body to go to the moon. But now they say that going to Mars is not just a dream, but it's going to happen. Not now, but in 2035. Some years down the track, and then we'll get to 2035, and yeah, we're still working on it. By 2050, we'll get to Mars, and we'll live there and exploit that planet. These are all just, post-data check. The whole mood of human society is to exploit nature. But actually, nature is much more powerful than we are. Nature's providing everything for us. Prabhupada explains that, the rivers are there with the water, so everyone can have fresh water. And by the seasonal changes, the ice that's kept in the mountains gets melted and comes down to the rivers. So everything's supplied for us. But if humans are godless and disobey the order of God, then then that same nature will turn on us and the rivers will become too full and flood everywhere and cause so much devastation and destruction. So then, nature shows its powerful side from time to time. When society is going against the laws of God, then she demonstrates very powerfully. So this is the understanding that we're trying to give to people, that Krishna is supreme opulence and Aishwarya. No one can excel Krishna. He's the supreme living entity out of all of us, anywhere in the universes. He also explains that he's the source of all spiritual and material worlds. So everything emanates from me. And then when we understand that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he's the only Supreme Lord, and I shouldn't try to be the Supreme Lord myself. Then Krishna says, the wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So this is when people have some faith that, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, or there is a God, I should surrender to him. He's the source of my existence and etc. Then they can begin to practice devotional service. So you get to this level of faith that there is a God and I must worship him. So there is some surrender there, which is what Krishna is asking from us. And then to the other aspect of Krishna's personality, or more intimate aspect of Krishna, because it's not only Krishna who's has all these opulences. Krishna and all of his incarnations, as Vishnu, as Narayan, Lord Ram, Lord Narasimha, they are also Krishna, and they also are supremely powerful. But then, when we want to increase our bhakti and surrender more, then it's helpful to hear about Krishna's madhurya aspect, his sweetness. And we can, specifically for Krishna, that sweetness is present more than in the other incarnations of God. This is, if you ever hear class by Panu Swami, who's practically his favourite topic, I think, that the supreme sweetness of Krishna versus all the other incarnations. Krishna, it's said that he's most perfect. And even Krishna in Vrindavan is the most perfect, and Act of Devotion describes Krishna in Dwarka is very perfect, and Krishna in Mathura is perfect. So, and I think, Prana Swami has explained how Lord Nishima, he doesn't manifest the opulence of beauty so much. But Prahlad Maharaj saw him as beautiful. He's a very fierce lion, half man. So being the Supreme Lord, he still has that opulence of beauty, but it's not manifested as much as in, for example, Krishna. So Nectar of Devotion describes the qualities of Krishna and the four super excellent qualities of Krishna, his sweet qualities that help us, help us to surrender more to him. So he is the first one being that he is the performer of wonderful activities. And there's a quote given that, you know, not only are we attracted to Krishna's sweet pastimes, but Krishna himself is attracted. He says that, although I have many fascinating pastimes, whenever I think of the Rasa Leela, which I perform with the gopis, I become eager to have it again. So there, you know, Krishna's performing so many leelas with his devotees, but even he's attracted to the sweetness of the Rasa Leela. And then another devotee described, he said, I know about Narayan, the husband of the goddess of fortune, and I also know about many other incarnations of the Lord. Certainly all the pastimes of such incarnations are exciting to my mind. But still, the pastimes of the Rasa Leela performed by Lord Krishna himself are wonderfully increasing my transcendental pleasure. So even on the spiritual plane is absolute. We still see some, it's just the intensifying of the Rasa. It's still pure love on the spiritual plane, but we see it gets intensified so much that you know, devotees are more attracted than to other pastimes. And then the second one of Krishna's sweet characteristics is that he's surrounded by loving devotees. His cowherd boys, his parents, his gopis, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So even we see, like, again, Bhanu Swami describes that Lord Ram has just two parents, or in the Vatsalya Ras, the devotees who relate to Lord Ram in the rasa of parenthood, he's just a few, like his parents and maybe some relatives and so on. But with Krishna, there's so many older gopis and his parents, Mother Yashoda and Nanda and Devaki and Vasudev, all have this relationship of parenthood with Krishna. And in Vaikuntha, no one really has the relationship of conjugal love with the Lord. It's mostly a relationship of servitorship, which is also prema bhakti. But there's less sort of devotees around the Lord in that mood of conjugal love as there is in Vrindavan. So this is another special feature of Krishna. And then third attractive feature of Krishna is his attractive flute. So, you know, even for great demigods, the sound of Krishna's flute is very bewildering. And, of course, on our level of practice, it's difficult for us to understand, but these examples are given to show that even for great devotees and great exalted demigods, the sound of Krishna's flute is very bewildering. Such as the four Kumaris, who became disturbed in their meditation, and Lord Brahma, who's meditating, sitting on his lotus flower, you know, doing tapasya to instigate the material creation. When he heard that flute, then he became astonished. And then also Lord Ananta, who was holding all the planets on his hoods, he became a bit disturbed by the sound of Krishna's flute. And the fourth super excellent quality of Krishna is his exquisite beauty. So everyone in Vrindavan becomes fascinated by that beauty of Krishna. And even Krishna himself saw, as you know, the spiritual world is made of Chintamani, wish fulfilling gems. So you can just imagine you're walking, I don't know, down Swanson Street, the, well, our street, so to speak. And it's all covered with gems, like diamonds and sapphire, emerald, all these things. And then Krishna saw himself in these gems. And just Krishna seeing his own bodily reflection, he thought it was so wonderful. And he wanted to embrace that form. So this is how, you know, Krishna's form is attractive even to himself. And therefore there's no, Prabhupada explains there that just his reflection or his shadow is non-different from Krishna. And so therefore also the pictures of Krishna are non-different from Krishna. So sometimes we're a bit, we think, oh, worshipping my picture at home is not as good as worshipping the deities. But worshipping, that's accepted by Krishna because it's non-different from Krishna. Whatever food we're offering to the pictures at home is accepted by Krishna because it's non-different from him. So these are different excellent qualities of Krishna that help us to surrender to him. As the more that we hear about them, so but still there's as both things. So even as we're practicing for several years, then we always have to hear about the supreme position of Krishna, and the reason being because we tend to forget. As we hear so many times Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and he's the only enjoyer. But still until it penetrates our consciousness, we're still acting in a way that shows that we think we're the enjoyer or we're the controller. So we need to keep chanting to cleanse our consciousness and keep hearing about Krishna's supreme position. I think there's that pastime with Prabhupada. He was getting his disciples to paint pictures of Krishna for the books and for the temples. And so one devotee had painted a picture of Radha and Krishna, some intimate leela. But Prabhupada said, no, I want pictures of Krishna as the supreme controller. And I think there's, for example, the picture that's on the front of Ishopanishad. That's Keshava. He's kind of, he's a very, he's showing Krishna as in a very supreme position and above all of us. And so, and then at the moment we're hearing about some of Krishna's pastimes as remembered by Uddhava. Later in the third canto, we'll hear about more of creation. So it's not only in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna's position is explained, but also it's reiterated in Srimad Bhagavatam. Later in this canto, Shishti Leela, how Krishna created the world. And so we get an idea just how practically far out it is, so how it came into being. That from very methodically and scientifically this world was created. And so then we need to inspire in us that feeling of, wow, this is, God is such a great person. The way he can create this world very effortlessly. And even now it's not that after he created the world, he's not involved. I mean, in one sense, he's not involved because it's just his energies going on. But in another sense, it couldn't go on, couldn't still be here being maintained without his input. So he still, has his hand in the affairs of the world. So this is the mostly why we stress to people, you know, you need to read Bhagavad Gita, and even if you don't like to read, then hear from other people and just keep hearing about Krishna, because we're so conditioned that, you know, we are the enjoyer, we're the center of the world. So we need to keep hearing. And then as we surrender more, then we can hear more about Krishna's other pastimes. And this is the beauty of Krishna book, actually. That Prabhupada did this perfectly in Krishna book. He presented Krishna's pastimes, the sweetness of his pastimes, and he also presented side by side the philosophy and the Aishwarya of Krishna. So that they're both there in Krishna book, so we don't just get carried away by nice pastimes of Krishna. Because everyone, you know, at least in India, everyone knows Krishna. You know, they know all about, they've seen his TV shows and how he lifted Govardhan Hill and he did so many things. But they don't understand actually his Aishwarya. So without understanding his Aishwarya, we can't appreciate his pastimes. Because we just, as I said in Bhagavad Gita, people who consider Krishna an ordinary person are fools. So just hearing about Krishna's pastimes without understanding his supreme position can lead us to commit that mistake. If you think, oh, Krishna is just a very ordinary person. He did some great things, but he's still ordinary, and, you know, I can compete with him. You know, I'm almost as good as him. So this is the importance of understanding about the tattva of Krishna, the truth about Krishna. And then with that basis, then we can proceed on to understanding more about his other pastimes. For example, in this verse, Uddhava first says, who, after smelling the dust of his lotus feet even once, could ever forget it? So it's pretty hard for, you know, beginning devotees to kind of connect with a statement like that. I mean, I don't think we haven't really smelt the dust of Krishna's feet. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit distant for us, that kind of... But of course, for a pure devotee, that's how they relate to Krishna. That they're just so absorbed in Krishna that Krishna fills up all their senses. So the smell of his lotus feet, for example. But while our senses are covered, then a statement like that is quite hard to relate to. So it takes time. So then the next statement that is sort of more what we need to be understanding, that by expanding his leaves of his eyebrows, Krishna has given the death blow to all those who are burning the earth. Yeah, it can sound very nice and sentimental, or like, oh, how amazing to smell his lotus feet and can never forget it. But actually, it's a very elevated, you know, position for a devotee to be at. So, yeah. So I'll stop there and see if anyone has any comments or questions. Yes, please.
The verse is Ova Amshangri Sarodvaranum.
Yes.
So can you give us some example where Lord Krishna does somebody smell and they were liberated? And the second part is he gave death to by eyebrows. So can you give us an example, please? I'll tell you why I'm saying this. When I was doing my post-graduation.
Your what?
Post-graduation study. In New Delhi. Medical Institute. One of my
instead of giving you just half marks.
Yeah. So this verse says, Om Om Shanti Sarojneyam. So the dust, see, meaning you read.
Yeah, the
word meaning of Prabhupada.
Saroja Rainam, dust.
Can you give us one example of that? When Lord's dust, somebody smelled, and they accepted. And the second part is death row to by eyebrows.
Death by violet eyebrows.
So preparation.
Sorry?
Preparation. When you get your words in Bhagavatam, you're on your hostel, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you should know that. I'm sorry to bring this. But so you know this. You are the example.
Smelling the dust of his.
But if I'm doing the same thing, I should be excited.
So smelling the dust of his lotus feet.
Because you're telling Krishna positive, everything's right. Nobody will say anything wrong. Because you're on the Vyarasana. But now we are asking the question, so how is Ramam?
The dust of the lotus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like
you remember the four Kumaras when they went into this picture?
Oh, yeah, when they I smelled the Tulsi from Krishna's feet.
Yeah.
You're telling me what answer to give, what answer I should give. Yeah, the Bhagavatam presents very, poetic and nice descriptions of Krishna. So all these nice descriptions presented in Bhagavatam, very pleasing to the ear, pleasing to the heart. So just hearing about this kind of helps us to become attracted to Krishna. So just like, the four Kumaras smelt the Tulsi that had been offered to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. And they gave up their impersonalism, I think. They were impersonalists. Yeah. So this is, we need to be attracted to Krishna somehow. Something has to attract us about Krishna. And so that example of the four Kumaras show that Krishna is very attractive. He can attract even someone who is very inimical or to Krishna, such as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became converted by Lord Chaitanya. He was a Vedanta Mayavadi. So even the form of Lord Chaitanya he became attracted to. So for devotees, we have to be attracted by something in Krishna consciousness. Shadam, this is the principle behind preaching. We're trying to present something about Krishna that is attractive to people. Generally, people are so covered that we can't present Krishna directly. We can't. So we have kirtans, very attractive to people, singing and dancing in the street. And prasadam distribution should be very good quality prasadam to attract people. And, talking about different topics to attract people so they feel it's relevant and applicable to them. So in these ways we try to attract people to Krishna. And then some things, Krishna consciousness is just in some ways irresistible for people, as Gangesh was describing. People just get caught up in it. Kubja. She was a prostitute who had a deformed body or something, and Krishna straightened her out. Pushed her. My guru said the original physiotherapist or something. Yeah. Any other comments or questions? Chaitanya. Yeah, material energy is looking after them. They're under the control of the material energy. So just by expanding the leaves of his eyebrows means he doesn't personally have to do it. He doesn't personally have to come and kill the people who are causing disturbance. You know, they're under the control of Durga. And yeah, and material energy will give them what's coming. Like, and even in Kali Yuga, it's described, like I think Dev Munimaraj described, the demons in Kali Yuga are also reduced. Everything in Kali Yuga is reduced in size and diminished. So the demons also, from our perspective, they seem like very troublesome and causing so much disturbance. But, you know, Hiranyakashipu was causing disturbance to the whole universe by his austerities, such that there was no air in the universe to breathe. So his demoniac activities were on that scale. But we're just seeing on this planet and this country. So they're minor time, small time demons. Anything else?
Is it correct to think that Krishna actually provides for the souls an opportunity to implement their sinful desires in Kali Yuga?
Yeah, he sanctions everything. He's trying to, he doesn't want them to do that. His example's given of if a child keeps insisting that, you know, I want to do this, I want to do this. But the parents say, no, that's not good for you, you shouldn't do that. It's the wrong thing to do. But if they keep insisting, then the parents allow that, and then the children are responsible for the reaction or the consequence of that. Parents can't be held responsible. So, yeah, people, Super Soul tries to guide people away from sinful activity, but they're so determined to enjoy the senses that they'll do any sinful thing. And that's not Krishna's fault.
So, can you elaborate a little bit how can we practically see a person who is more surrendered or less surrendered? And so, what's the difference between that?
I guess it's not an external thing. Someone can present themselves as very big devotee, but test of surrender is surrender to the spiritual master, and how we won't deviate from their instructions, and shaking faith in the spiritual master and the Vedas. So, Kantra Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Vita Gaura Premanande.